This is Sign Language with Bruce Williams and Doc Goldstein.
Hi, and welcome to episode 172 of Sign Language. This is Bruce Williams.
And this is Doc.
How are you, mate?
I'm pretty good. I'm actually in record, too, so how about that?
Oh, that's always a good start.
Yeah. Just made it, actually.
How was your Christmas and New Year?
My Christmas and New Year was good. You know, we always have way too much food, and I still managed to lose 2 pounds. So
nice.
You know,
nice work.
But, it was a good holiday, and now I'm finding it hard to get back in, you know, come out swinging, you know what I'm saying?
Right. Yes. So I've been a little bit slack. I don't normally take that long a break on the podcast over Christmas, New Year. I'm normally back into it by mid-January, and this year, I don't know, I just didn't seem to get my act together. Maybe it's this being unemployed thing. It's slowing me down.
That'll do it.
Ah, dear, oh dear. Now, the funny thing is, I had it in my mind when we finished recording the last episode, which was, you know, all about compression. I had this notion in my head that there was still so much more to discuss.
Yeah, I think there was.
And just an hour ago, I made myself listen back to that episode just to remind myself of what we'd covered and to also, you know, remind myself of what else it was we were going to cover. And I've kind of come away with it going, what else were we going to cover?
Well, I don't think we talked about some of the differences in what the different ones sound like and tubes versus transistors and, you know, FET versus, you know, light optical type compressors and things like that.
Okay.
I'm just afraid that we'll you know, everybody will turn to stone listening to all this constant compression talk. So I don't want to bore everybody too much, but maybe we should just touch on a couple of things.
Sure.
You know? And I kind of sidestepped the issue of multiband compression when that was brought up because that can be such a keg of worms. So
definitely.
You know.
So that's something we can certainly talk about that. There is actually one thing I wanted to bring up, and that was you and I had a little back and forth that only lasted for about 30 seconds in that last episode about whether or not the makeup gain is active all the time or only active when compression is occurring. And I've been mucking around with my compressor here in my rack, and admittedly this is not a classic like an 1176 or anything that anyone would ever have heard of. This is it's called the Dynamics Toolbox, and it was made by a little boutique English company called Safe Sound Audio, who unfortunately have gone out of business. But it's a beautiful compressor.
Yeah, I remember when you got it, you were very impressed by it when you
yeah,
got it.
Yeah, but what I do notice with that is that the makeup gain is constant. It sort of acts as a like an output control.
I found that as long as you're not in bypass, I found that to be the case. So.
Right, okay. So I just wanted to clear that up because the way it came across in the last episode, it made it sound like the makeup game would only work when the compressor was actually, you know, compressing. And I just wanted to, yeah.
Well, I think that, you know, not too many compressors work with microprocessors yet, you know, so that might happen someday, but that'd be really hard to mix if it was doing that by itself. I wouldn't wouldn't like that.
No.
But then I'm pretty old school, you know, compressors that have a knee control to make it a hard knee or a soft knee, I just set it to hard and go on because I learned when there was no such thing as a soft knee. So
yeah, right. You know. So you would not be a fan of a very mu design, which by its nature, the ratio increases as the incoming signal increases in level.
Well, you would think that, and yet I love LA2As. So,
right. But
you know.
But didn't we say that LA2A was an opto design, not a very mu?
Yeah, it's an opto design, but its ratio gets, you know, more intense as you
go over
threshold. At least it seems that way to me.
Right.
Of course, it's hard to know because it takes about 2 weeks for the release time to do its thing.
Yeah.
You know.
So you wanted to discuss how different compression types sound. What do you mean by that?
Well, there's a lot said in advertisements by marketers who, you know, I don't blame them because they have car payments to make and kids to feed. But a lot of times marketers will say things like tube warmth, and that just drives me nuts.
Yeah.
Because it's basically saying that if you put a tube in a circuit, it's automatically going to sound warm. And it doesn't pay any attention to the skill of the designer.
Sure.
I think it's really more important that you have a great designer as opposed to whether you have a tube in the thing or not. And there's plenty of non-tube compressors that are plenty warm. But there are also some really great tube compressors that sound fantastic. But I don't just automatically say, oh, it's a tube, therefore it's good, you know.
Sure.
I just don't look at it that way. And
it's got to be the right tool for the job.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Like, you know, I always talk about API, obviously, but, and I don't work for them, but, which I hastily insert that because I say it every time, but, you know, their stuff is not tubed and it sounds great. And the old Rupert Neve consoles or the Neve consoles before he sold the company back in the 70s,
yep.
You know, that stuff is practically the holy grail of mixing consoles and there's no tubes in those things.
Yeah.
And this is not against tubes because they're great. Like, I love the LA2A, like I said before, and I love some other tube stuff. And there's some really great companies, you know, like Tube Tech and Manly and other companies making great tube equipment. So it's not against tubes. It's about the design and the implementation that's important, you know. And I just think that gets lost in the marketing, you know.
Yeah. You know, I sort of, as you were talking, I was imagining an analogy of, say, a carpenter who probably has a range of different types of hammers amongst his toolkit, but one hammer is appropriate for one type of work and another hammer is appropriate for a different type of work. And I think the same can be said of compressors, you know, that there's no one size fits all.
Yeah, I agree. Unless you have an SM57 and then you can use that as a hammer as well.
Yeah, I knew you'd pick up on that. Okay, so shall we discuss multiband compression?
Yeah, sure. Multiband compression splits, you know, as many people know, it splits the frequency band into more than one group so that you can compress those different groups of frequencies separately. So if you really want more bottom to a track, you can bring that up. You know, you bring up the makeup gain after you squash the bass, and it makes that pump a little more, particularly good for dance music and things like that.
Yeah. It can also be really handy if you've got a track that was, you know, maybe recorded with the wrong microphone for what the signal was, and so it ends up with an abnormal tonal shift, you know, like it might have been, you know, maybe it was horns that, you know, naturally sound quite prominent in the mid-range and the upper mid-range. And if it was recorded with a cheap, nasty mic that already had quite a leaning towards the top end in its frequency response, then it hasn't translated a lot of the bottom end of that instrument. Sometimes EQ just won't do it. And sometimes some multiband compression can be just the fix that it needs. You know, we, as you say, you adjust that crossover point and then apply some, you know, judicious compression to the low end and then use some makeup gain to help rebalance it tonally.
Yeah, I agree with that. But I just think that a lot of people who are, if they're starting out, need to be kind of go slow with these things because you can really tie yourself into a knot. But yes,
totally.
In the right hands, they can be really a great tool. And now there's a similar thing, like McDSP makes a plugin that is an equalizer, but it's a dynamic equalizer. So it's very similar. It's like an equalizer with a threshold control.
Nice.
So you can set, yeah, like if you have a singer that's getting a little edgy in the bridge, for example,
yep.
You can have it over a certain level of threshold, you can have it, you know, modify the EQ setting, which is kind of interesting.
Nice.
And I haven't really played with that, but I'm getting ready to try it out.
I think I mentioned this once or twice before that Reaper has a very similar feature built in to the native EQ plugin that ships with Reaper. And that there was a mix I was working on one time where I really wanted everything to be yeah, really loud and up and in your face, and particularly the guitars. And there was a point at which the guitars had a tendency to overpower the vocal. And what I was able to do was sidechain an EQ that was on the guitar bus from the lead vocal, so that whenever the lead vocal was present, it would just dip the upper mid-range EQ that was on the guitar bus. And so it just allowed the voice to cut through without actually lowering the volume of the guitar's submix.
Yeah,
you know,
I
it
like
just
that.
It just did this dynamic EQ dip in the, you know, 2 to 3K range, just only when the vocal appeared. I just love being able to do stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. I'd probably do it the hard way and gain ride the thing. The equalizer, you know. But, you know, I'm getting ready to try that EQ, McDSP EQ that I mentioned, because yep. I have almost everything else that company makes anyway, so I might as well get that.
Nice.
You know. And again, I'm not trying to do an ad for anybody, and nobody's paying me, but I have a lot of those plugins from McDSP into my API hardware, of course. So
Cool.
You know, I just think that anytime you have a threshold attached to anything, do a lot of testing, you know, and don't learn on a customer's dime, because, you know, it can go bad when you're starting out. So yeah.
Okay, look, I think we've covered compression to death, I hope.
Unless there's if there's any questions about it, you know.
Yeah.
Anybody out there has a question, you know, like, why are you still talking about compressors? That would be a question.
Send that question through so we can talk about it some more.
You know, I mentioned before we were recording the podcast about the irony of the microphones that we use.
So of course. Yes.
So here's the irony. So today I'm using a Rode mic, which I do a lot.
Yeah.
And, you know, in past podcasts, I've used my U87 and I've used my SM57. And we had one reader write in and say he preferred the SM57. So thanks, you know, appreciate it. So today I'm using my Rode, and the model I'm using is an NT1A. I've got like 7 Rode mics.
Right.
Of all different types and sizes and diaphragm sizes. But I'm using this one because I tend to use it a lot anyway. And I can't get to where Rode is made, but I can get to where your microphone is made in about an hour. And you can get to where my microphone is made in about an hour. So it's funny. So I'm using a mic made in your neck of the woods, and you're using a mic made in my neck of the woods. Isn't that weird?
That is crazy. That is crazy.
You know, because the Rode mics are made in, aren't they made right near Sydney? They're in Sydney.
Yeah.
Right.
You know? Look, the factory used to be in a suburb called Rydalmere in Sydney, and that was literally 5 minutes from where I was living at the time. That was in the mid-90s. I believe they've relocated within Sydney, but what I don't know is whether or not, because, I mean, back then, they were just starting to, you know, break ground as a microphone manufacturer, and they were still making all their stuff, as best as I know, locally. At this point in time, given the kind of market they now command, I would imagine they're outsourcing their production to, you know, the third world. But I don't know that for sure. I really don't know where they're made. But yes,
my understanding was that when they first started, they were making their mics offshore,
right?
And then after about a year, they brought them all to Australia, and that they're still made in Australia.
Oh, wow.
I know that all of mine are made in Australia because they say made in Australia right on the easily removable sticker.
Nice. Excellent. Excellent.
You know, but I can't speak factually, but that's my understanding.
Yeah, right.
I like the mics. You know, they're great for the money.
I have their M5 matched pair, which are like a small diaphragm condenser matched pair, and they come with a little certificate saying that, yes, these were tested at the factory and they're within a half a dB of, you know, each other in terms of frequency response across the range and yada, yada, yada. And they're great.
Aren't those kind of similar to KM-184s, that kind of thing?
I think you mentioned that, yeah. I'm not familiar with a KM-184 per se, but, you know.
Well, it's a small diaphragm condenser.
Yep.
That cardioid that Neumann makes.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a non-transformer, newer electronics version of the old KM-84.
Okay.
And they're both great mics. They're a little different from each other, but they're both great.
Yeah, right. You know, yeah, so that is funny that your you know, using a mic that's made not far from me, and I'm using a mic that's made not far from you.
Well, let's review for the listeners what mic you're using.
So it's an AEA, that's Audio Engineering Associates, a company started by Wes Dooley, R84 ribbon mic.
Uh-huh.
And I was fortunate enough to meet Wes. He came out here for one of our audio trade shows, probably about 10 years ago now. And we had a good old chat at the time. But, love this mic. It's great.
Well, it's a great sounding mic, and Wes is a good guy. So I'm happy that he's having the success that he's having. You know, I've known him on and off for a long time.
Yeah.
And I knew him before the AEA was making microphones. You know, he had an audio company in Pasadena, but they weren't making mics.
Oh,
and
what
he's
was he
always
doing?
He was doing other audio related stuff, but he's always been really sharp, and he had sharp people there. So, you know, it's good.
Yeah, nice.
It's a good thing.
Nice.
I think the last time we had a conversation was in San Francisco at the Hilton Hotel in the lobby during an AES convention. And that could have been 10 years ago.
Yeah, right.
You know,
wow.
So.
Yeah. Over the break that we've had, I came across a website which I thought I would share for anyone who's interested in sharpening up their skills mixing music. And it's called Cambridge-MT.com. And this guy, a guy called Mike Senior, set this site up. And I've literally only discovered this in the last week or so. And I don't know how he's managed to source all of the content, but what he's done is hosted multi-track files in zip format for a whole range of bands who've, I don't know, maybe the bands come to him and submit their songs, but they're all sorted by genre. And anyone can go along and download the multi-tracks for a song in any of the, you know, predefined genres that you like. And you can then mix the song in whatever DAW you choose to work in. Use whatever plugins you want. You can leave in or take out elements of the mix if that is what you feel the song needs. And you then are able to post your mix in the forum on CambridgeMT.com and get feedback from other listeners who've all, you know, done their mixes and posted their mixes, so you can hear how other people interpreted the mix, you know, for a song, and then compare that against your own mix, and then get feedback from other users. And I thought, what a great concept, you know, and given the quantity of content that he's got up there, you know, no matter what type of music you're into, if you want to hone your mixing skills, this is a great place to start.
Well, Mike Senior has that book out, Mixing Techniques for the Small Studio. He's a writer for Sound on Sound magazine, which is a great magazine.
Right. I think you mentioned that book.
And Alan Parsons also has files available of stuff that he's done that you can mix, that you can download from his website.
Wow.
And at this last NAMM show here in Anaheim, you know, I didn't see him there, but he had a booth there that was touting that.
Right.
So that would be very interesting. Both of these sites sound really good and are taking advantage of what you can do with the ability to download and work in a DAW. So that's great.
Yeah. So anyway, I thought I would share that for anyone who has an interest in, you know, mixing music and doesn't have, you know, a musician handy to record, you know, all different sorts of arrangements for you to play with. This can be a great way to dip your toe in the water.
It's probably a good way to hear what somebody does that knows what they're doing as well. You
definitely.
Know, a good learning experience.
Definitely. So I will put that link in the show notes for anyone that wants to check that out.
Yeah.
All right, Doc.
Well, there is this one thing. There's this Greg Anderson note.
Yes. Thank you for reminding me of that. Greg Anderson sent us a link on the Facebook page today to a YouTube channel. Now, I've heard of this guy, Destin. He has a channel called Smarter Every Day, but he has another channel called The Sound Traveler. And he posted this video on his main channel, which is Smarter Every Day, as a bit of a cross-promote for his other channel. But what I thought was, and thank you, Greg, for sending this link across, because I really enjoyed watching it. What he's done is got in touch with one of 20 photographers who was given permission to go up onto the roof of the vehicle assembly building at Cape Canaveral or Kennedy, whichever one it was, where the Falcon Heavy rocket took off from a couple of days ago. And he set him up with binaural recording microphones on his head and a video camera. And so you get to experience this whole moment in time as this photographer goes up in the lift and up onto the roof of the vehicle assembly building, and they set up their cameras, and there's all these other photographers, or 19 other photographers there, and they photograph the launch of the Falcon Heavy rocket, and then witness the landing of the two booster pods as they came back down. And all of it's captured binaurally, so you know, you listen to it with headphones on. It's absolutely fascinating. So thank you, Greg. I really appreciate it.
I hope they had pads on the microphones.
Yeah, well, that was one thing I was very impressed with. I didn't hear any clipping in any of it. So obviously he'd, you know, recorded at 24-bit and set the, you know, the record level quite low to, you know, allow for that moment when the rocket took off, because yes, I can imagine that would be extremely loud, even from, you know, 5 miles away.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, it was really cool. You should definitely go and have a look at the video, Doc. It's great.
Oh, I will. I haven't had a chance to do it yet, but I will do that in the next day or so.
Yeah.
I'm running around like a crazy man these days. So it's just nuts how busy I am. And, I'm busy. I'm almost as busy as before I retired.
Really?
So it's crazy.
Well, that's great. I suppose it keeps you on your toes.
Yeah, it does indeed. So I think I'd like to hear from the listener pool out there as to what they'd like us to talk about on the next podcast, because
sure,
we can come up with a bunch of great topics, you know.
Yep.
Console signal flow, for example, wouldn't be a bad one.
Sure.
Since there are similarities. And why do you need a preamp, you know, preamp 101, that, you know.
Yeah.
There are plenty of things we could talk about, but rather than put the audience into a coma, I think it'd be kind of cool if we had an idea of what they wanted us to talk about, and I'd
definitely
be happy to do that, you know.
Yep.
Especially if it's something I'm not an expert in, because that'll cause me to have to learn about it. And that's always good.
Yeah, for sure. For you sure. Know. All right. Well, that sounds like a plan. Drop us a line, people. You have the email address, theboys@signlanguagepodcast.com. Yeah, we'd love to hear what you would like us to discuss. And like Doc, I'm always happy to read up on some new stuff if I have to, so that's great.
Well, this is kind of a short one, but I think we've pretty much said what we wanted to say today.
I think so.
So just watch. Somebody will dial in and say, when are you guys going to talk about compression?
Yeah, the beauty of a podcast is I can always point them back and go, there's the link, go for it.
Yeah.
All right, mate. Well, you have a good couple of weeks.
You too. And we'll talk to you soon. And let's hope we hear from some people out there.
Absolutely.
Sign language. Another audiotoyou.com quality podcast. For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@signlanguagepodcast.com.